This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. It's breezy and sunny. A high temperature of 42 today, much better than yesterday. 31 degrees right now, 41 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, reports that China is easing back from harder stances it took with regard to trade with the U.S. has Wall Street in rally mode, and the Dow is gaining 432 points, or 1.75%. We're back above 24,800. NASDAQ higher by 2.25%, or 156 points, and the S&P advancing 46. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index higher by almost 2%. While a drop in gas prices kept a lid on retail-level inflation last month, with the annual rate of consumer price increases near the lowest of a year, when you take out food and energy costs, the core rate of inflation rose to a 2.2% annual rate. That is the number that the Fed watches closely, and it is above their target 2% minimum. So we are expecting to see higher interest rates. More people were applying for mortgages last week. Home loan applications jumped 2.5%. Refi apps up 1.8%. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thank you. And on today's Noon Business Hour, we're going to be talking about inflation with economist Diane Swonk and Mayor Emanuel's plan to stabilize city pensions.
Personal Finance Wednesday. Just how long will younger workers have to work? Maybe well into their 70s before they can retire? And Chicago is among the cities in the nation where more and more people are quitting their jobs because they don't like the long commute. All of that and loads more on today's WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Chicago's outgoing mayor has a plan to handle the city's impending pension crisis. We're going to cover that in our next segment right now. There appears to be some progress in the trade tug of war with China, while the report on consumer prices also leads today's data. We're joined by Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Let's talk about the consumer prices, Diane. What are you looking at there?
Well, the good news is that we have lower prices at the pump, and that certainly is freeing up discretionary spending for consumers as we head into the last weeks of the holiday season, which is welcome news for retailers out there. On the underlying inflation numbers, there wasn't as much improvement or sort of deceleration in prices as many had hoped. We saw 2.2% year-over-year gains, a little up from October, and we're up about 0.5% from a year ago in terms of inflation. That's something the Fed had welcomed, and in welcoming it, it will raise rates one more time next week when it meets to raise rates in December, and then I think they're going to take a pause. The interesting thing in the consumer price index is the increases we saw in used car prices. What happened was a lot of flooded cars had to be replaced in recent months, and that really elevated the price of used cars relative to new cars. That's going to play out a little bit as we go forward. On the flip side of it, something that showed up in the consumer price index is something we're experiencing. Shipping costs, although they have gone up, many of the major retailers are eating those shipping costs and still giving free shipping on certain packages to consumers for the holiday season, which showed up as a decline in transportation costs in the actual CPI. Now, that contrasts what we saw in producer prices who had to pay those actual prices at the margin squeeze for those producers, because even though prices at the pump went down, it still costs a lot more to move things around with more expensive truckers across the country. There's a real shortage of truckers right now.
As you said, the anticipation is next week the Fed is going to raise again, and then not much activity on that for the next year or so. Why not?
Well, what we're going to see is the economy is slowing down. It's slowing in the fourth quarter, and the Fed's going to test the waters and see how much it slows. I think the Fed will still raise rates two more times in 2019. I am concerned about a recession in 2020, and as we turn the year into 2019, depending on what happens with the trade situation and, more importantly, growth abroad, which is weakening, that could tip us into recession and force the Fed to start reversing course and actually cutting rates. But we're still in got a lot of momentum going into the beginning of the year, even though the economy is slowing.
So what is it that you as an economist would like to see out of these trade talks with China? I mean, is there a way economists would say this could be settled that would end up being good for not only our country, but the wider global economy?
Well, the best opportunity we have is if we do something multilateral with our allies, many of which we've burned in recent years. But, you know, we are in the situation that we are with China, in part because of the arrest that we had Canada do for us with regard to one of their executives, one of their tech executives. And I think what's important is that we have coordinated efforts with China, because many of what our biggest complaints are complaints that our allies in trade also have, and that's their intellectual property theft, hacking of our major companies, which we've seen more recently again. And those are the things we want to discontinue and punish China for. It's much easier to do that when you have many countries gathering together and showing a united front than it is to do it just as one country on another. Even with the might of the United States, it's just much easier when you've got to say, when you say to China, this is how the world rules are, not just the rules between you and I, but the way that the world wants you to, the rules the world wants you to abide by going forward.
Diane, let's touch on mortgages. You have mortgage applications rising, rates are dropping. How important is it that we get more and more people actually out there buying?
That's something that is of real concern right now. And even though mortgage applications are up, they're down for the year from a year ago. And we're starting to see that home sales have been declining for some time, along with we now expect housing starts look like they've come off their peak as well. This is one of those canary in the coal mine areas where we'd like to see that incomes are picking up enough and mortgages are still reasonable enough that you can continue to bring in first-time buyers. Instead, what we've seen is, you know, when you get one minor week of a decline in mortgage rates, you might get a couple more people in, but we're not getting the mass of people we want to get in on those first-time buyers. And many of them are millennials who had to defer and delay buying their first home anyways because their entry-level wages coming out of school were much lower than other generations because they emerged during a crisis and were paid lower. And they also have that overhang of student debt that other generations did not have as well.
Diane, thanks so much for joining us. Diane Swonk is chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Coming up, evaluating Mayor Emanuel's strategy to deal with the city's looming pension crisis.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Mayor Emanuel is sharing his ideas on how to handle the city's huge pension debt before he leaves office. Joining us now on the International Auto's Orland Park business line to discuss the plan, Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Greg, what is the mayor proposing?
Well, he's proposing kind of an odd lot of things, none of which, for the most part, would pass while he's still the mayor. So this is kind of like advice for his successor. Some of them are rather simple. If the state legalized marijuana, sales recreational, he wants that money, the city's cut of the taxes to go to pensions. If the legislature authorizes a gaming casino in Chicago, he wants that to go to pensions. That could happen. Both are real possibilities in Springfield, but there's a couple other really controversial ideas. One is to amend the state constitution to reduce the amount that we have to pay. And the other is to go into the markets and borrow $10 billion and invest it in the expectation that we will earn more on the $10 billion than we'll pay in interest to borrow the money.
And the Constitution Amendment, is that maybe of all of these, is that the toughest one politically to get done?
Yeah, if we had maybe if Bruce Rauner had won re-election and he picked carried some Republicans with him down in Springfield, it would have a chance. But Mr. Pritzker has opposed that. Said we just need to pay what we've promised. Democrat majorities in the House and the Senate are very close to organized labor. Despite that, though, the mayor makes a point worth considering. What's really driving the pension costs are the 3% annual guaranteed compound COLAs that retirees get and future retirees get. That's an awful good deal now because inflation is only 1 or 2%, but that provision was put in about 30 years ago, 25 years ago, when inflation was much higher, and it was, and it sounded like a more reasonable deal. But the unions don't want to give it away now. They insist, you promise you got to pay it. We don't care, even though the cost is absolutely huge. According to the mayor, it's going to cost us an extra $42 billion over the next 40 years.
Is the mayor attempting, reaching for legacy here?
Well, he is. And frankly, he has done some things to begin to solve the pension problem that Rich Daley largely ignored. But there's a lot more to be done. And the problem is, you know, people want to spend money on schools. They want to hire more cops. They want to spend money on economic development. That money isn't available for those purposes if it's all got to go to pension. So until we get a handle on how to deal with this, we have a real problem.
Hey, this is kind of an aside, but we learned this week that there's going to be a documentary of the Chicago mayoral race this year. Do you know about that?
I've heard just a little bit about it. I would say they have good material. I mean, this is the best cheap entertainment in town. Just pull up your chair and got some popcorn and watch, because it's going to be one heck of a fight.
One of the things the incoming governor's talked a lot about is a graduated income tax. That would take a, unless there's some sort of a tax credit way of getting it done, it would take a constitutional amendment. Is there any chance that there's some horse trading where we might end up seeing both of these on the ballot?
I think not. Mr. Pritzker very much wants the graduated income tax, and he campaigned on it. And he can, if nothing else, go out and tell lawmakers that, hey, I said I was going to do this, and I'm going to keep my word, so let's do it. He did not campaign on changing the Constitution to limit pensions. So that's got to start over. Plus, the Democratic majorities are going to do this in two different terms. From a Democratic perspective, a progressive income tax is a good idea, but cutting back on pensions for retirees is not.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You're right. Thanks, Greg Hines, columnist, Crane's Chicago Business. Always good insight. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday. A lack of early planning can force people to work much longer than they had hoped to. Bloomberg will check the markets next.
WBBM News Time 12:25. Let's take a look at the markets with Elisa Peretti.
Chris, we are headed much higher. The Dow is up 427 points, or 1.75%. The benchmark right at 24,800. NASDAQ is gaining 156 points, or 2.25%. S&P higher by 46 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg gaining almost 2%. McCormick, the spice company, is not happy with a new spice on the market that comes from a startup called Primal Palate. New Bay, spelled B-A-E, may confuse shoppers, McCormick argues in a court filing, with its Old Bay seasoning. McCormick wants New Bay taken off store shelves and everything related to it destroyed. We've got crude oil futures headed higher by about 1% to $52.13. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Beans have been up 7.5 at times at the moment. We have January beans up 3 at 9.18. Corn was up 2 to 3 at one time. We have those unchanged right now in March at 384.75. And wheat has been in the March at 527.5, up 6.5, with beans up that 3. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are rallying today. We'll see what's elevating the markets.
Personal Finance Wednesday. Your retirement could come a little later than planned if you don't do enough to build up financial foundations.
Job turnover is at its highest rate in nearly 20 years. We'll look at the reasons people are opting for change.
Mayor Emanuel's looking to gambling and marijuana for a solution to the city's pension problems.
Former Trump attorney Michael Cohen has been sentenced to 3 years in prison.
Wall Street, the Dow Industrials up 433, the NASDAQ up 158, and the S&P 500 gaining 46 points.
40 degrees in Chicagoland, mix of sun and clouds throughout the day, maybe some rain tomorrow evening. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Well, the markets are higher at this hour. We are joined by Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley FBR in New York. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. Art, the markets are doing pretty well today. Why?
Yeah, Chris, thanks so much. And I think that the markets over the last, you know, call it month or so, have been reacting positively to constructive news on China trade and negatively when we get the opposite. And I think that's exactly what we have today. So a couple pieces of news out on China trade. China is going to try to increase access to foreign companies in a move aimed at smoothing over some of the China trade relations as we work on finding a path to an exit to a trade war with China. And then there's a report that they're back in the soybean business and they bought a good chunk of soybeans from us as another sign of good faith. So it feels as though we're more constructive today on China than we were, you know, yesterday or the day before. And you know, the more good news we get on China, the more that headwind dissipates a bit and this market can move in a positive fashion. It doesn't take much for it to move the other way, unfortunately. And when we get the conflicting reports out of the White House, sometimes that, you know, causes those up and down days where we seem like we're in a good place and then it ends up washing away by the close. But right now it feels like a pretty constructive day and a lot of it having to do with China.
And well, and they're also talking in public. You know, they're throwing out ideas in public, and the markets are responding to each one.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that I would like to hear that they're talking for sure. You know, the more details that either side brings forward with, because we don't know what the end game is. We really don't know that, it's just about, you know, how much stuff we buy from them versus how much they buy from us versus technology and technology transfer and IP theft and you know, opening up Chinese markets to businesses without sort of taking over their intellectual property. So I really think that that's the end game. It's less about trade. It's more about technology and the more we hear that we're working in the right direction, I really feel like the more this market can shed some of those concerns and you know, getting some constructive news on China would help a lot of things. I think the dollar would weaken a little bit. I think that would help our multinationals. You know, some of the stocks that have been held back on the industrial side would probably, with China exposure, would probably move higher and certainly help emerging markets. So in general, the more good news we get on China really lifts a lot of boats. And you know, today's one of those days where it feels like the news is more good than bad.
You mentioned protections for technology. Is that really the main thing that investors are looking for out of any sort of a deal with China?
Well, I think that's the end game. You know, it's interesting. We started this trade war on trade, right? And the alleged cause for this was an imbalance of trade, which is almost impossible to do when you're a developed country and most of your goods and services are just that, services versus, you know, a developing country where most of your product is actually good. So, you know, I think it's a whole lot more about, you know, a level playing field with China and the rest of the world. Oh, by the way, I think the rest of the world is looking at us and saying, yeah, it's about time someone did that, but none of us were strong enough to do it. So I think we do have the wind at our back in terms of having global support for what we're doing, and especially if it goes well and doesn't last too long.
See, bank stocks doing all right. What's behind bank stocks rising?
Wow, they've been just absolutely in the wrong place, you know, this quarter, and a lot of it has to do with three things. So concern over the flattening yield curve, and simply stated, banks want to lend short, borrow short and lend long, and that's hard to do when you have a flat yield curve. You need net interest margins, and those were shrinking. I think that, you know, they're a proxy to global growth. Most of the money center banks, the large banks, are global, and they're a proxy to what that global growth looks like in terms of loan demand and demand for their services, and clearly, you know, that picture has changed a bit and looks to change more in 19 with some slowing around Europe and some slowing in China. So I think there's some concerns about the slowing economic growth. And I think clearly, you know, banks have not been the beneficiary we thought they might be in repatriated cash and rising interest rates. So, you know, you can sort of got a cauldron of concerns causing investors to shy away from financials. And then today they just look oversold to getting a nice little bounce. It's one of the groups that's been the worst performing group, not just for the last couple months, but most of this year. It's nice to see them bounce.
Do you expect to see the Fed raise next week, and should they?
You know, I think they should. I think it's back to 50-50 on December, and I think the entirety of next year is a wait and see. I think that, you know, a month ago we probably thought the Fed was locked and loaded for December, and there's been enough soft spots both in domestic and global economy that they might take a pause. Probably not. I think the safe bet is that they raise once in December and then take a wait and see, data-dependent look towards 2019. And remember, you know, 2 months ago we thought it was locked that they were going to go three times, maybe four times in 19. So So that neutral rate is getting a lot closer to where we are, and it just depends on the pace of economic growth in 19, the level of inflation and the levels of employment to see if they actually need to nudge a little bit higher. So I think the Fed's a much more moderate Fed post this December meeting. I think we'll hear about that in the comments when they meet next week.
Lowe's announces a $10 billion buyback. What does it say in general for the home improvement sector?
Well, I can tell you, both Lowe's and Home Depot, and especially Home Depot, have been doing great. It's interesting that when you have a housing industry that is plagued by rising interest rates and not enough demand, part of that not enough demand is people aren't moving and selling their houses. A lot of reasons for that, but the demographics have been difficult for the housing industry this year, and when you don't sell your house, you tend to fix it up. So I think both Lowe's and Home Depot have done a great job capturing that. Lowe's does a little bit better job on the commercial end, but on the retail side, they're both doing pretty well. And they will get rewarded for being shareholder friendly. But I think it's a space than that do-it-yourself area that is the kind of the opposite knee reaction you have when there's not a lot of inventory on the market for folks to move into and buy.
Thanks for joining us today. Art Hogan is Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley FBR in New York. And up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, how early planning can help avoid a late retirement.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. This afternoon, we're exploring ways to ensure you can retire on your schedule. We welcome Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness. Craig, when I initially see this headline, young workers are at risk of having to work into their 60s and 70s, I think, wait a minute, doesn't everyone have to work into their 60s and 70s?
Well, you know what, there's probably some truth in that, but there's a generational divide. You know, what we've talked about on the Noon Business Hour before is that the boomers and Gen Xers, we have a savings problem for retirement because we tend to buy things that we don't need with money that we don't have to impress people. For millennials, it's a different circumstance. The circumstance that the millennials have found themselves in, specifically in this Aon report, to be so behind for savings is the crushing student debt, the high rents, and what for quite a long time has been stagnant wages. It really put them behind the eight ball.
And so what do they do then in order to get caught up? I guess we're wanting them to be able to retire when they want to retire, not having to stick around longer than they want to.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the psychology, and then let's talk about the action to take. You know, the psychology is, you know, when you feel like the deck is stacked against you, you know, you're working a lot, millennials aren't necessarily making the wage that they thought they would have, and trying to, you know, put together some semblance of a social life, it's hard just to take that first step forward. But I think the first step is something we've talked about time and time again, which is number one, we need to create a budget. We've got to start telling our money where to go instead of wondering where it went. And then after the budget, it's all about allocating dollars towards retirement first.
This gets very confusing. Do you go to someone where you can sit down and talk, or you try to read about it and figure your way through it?
Well, you know, I think there's so many fantastic resources that are out there online, on the website, but I think if you find yourself this time of the year consistently waking up with what I consider to be a financial hangover, I think it would be good to have a sounding board to get some objective financial advice, not just in creating that budget, but then setting priorities. And if you can just move the needle incrementally at the margins, it really makes an impact. In fact, the single biggest thing I consistently see, we talked about it last month, is I have millennials that are bypassing contributions to their employer-sponsored 401k plan, despite the fact that they could be getting free money in the company match. That's something we've just got to stop.
Are they having to, like a lot of people, start thinking about the fact that maybe they need several different pots of money, not just that employer's 401k plan, and certainly not just Social Security?
Well, I think there's no doubt about it. Everybody knows the statistics. It's not that Social Security eventually goes broke. It's that the Social Security doesn't have enough money based on the current payroll tax system to handle all of the benefits that have been provided. And that, I think, is one of the other reasons where when we start consulting with clients, millennials, those that are starting to take the first step, starting to save, that's why you have a lot of millennials pursuing what we call side hustles to go ahead and generate additional income to make up for the fact that they acknowledge they're behind because of the student debt and high rent. So you're right. It's not just saving and work-sponsored plans. It's focusing more on the income side to bring in additional revenue.
Which means you got to have a job.
You got to get out there and work. I mean, you know, someone once said you got to get off your butt to make a buck. And I can't think of a better job environment and a better economy right now to do exactly that.
Craig Bolanos, always appreciate you being with us. Craig is founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday, still to come. How a horrible commute can lead to job turnover.
A wallet full of information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A bad commute can lead people to quit a job, and Chicago's a leader in the category. Joining us on the International Autos Orland Park business line, Tom Young is manager at vice president of the staffing firm Robert Half here in Chicago. Tom, thanks for joining us today. Tell us what you found in your survey.
Well, it's interesting. So Chicago, as you mentioned, has the highest percentage of resignations due to commute of any of the 28 cities surveyed around the country. Nationwide, it's 23. So Chicago is, you know, significantly higher than that, which is, you know, again, from a Chicago market standpoint, probably the most significant takeaway.
So people are leaving, quitting their job, possibly moving to a different state or city?
More likely, certainly that could be the scenario in some situations, but more likely changing jobs. The other piece that we found is that, you know, in this survey of employees, 50% of them said that their employers were doing nothing to alleviate the difficulty of that commute. So, you know, that's one out of two companies that are, obviously, and a lot of, you know, employees who are leaving jobs because of the commute are going to that other half of employers in any given market, in our case Chicago, where their employers or those companies may be recognizing that as an issue to retain employees.
And so if you're in a situation where you have a rough commute, whether it's driving or taking the train or whatever, if the labor market is not tight, you may have to stick with that, right? But given the fact that people can find jobs, does that make it easier for them to move on?
That's absolutely the case. Yeah, we're at historic unemployment levels. And so employees understand that if a company is not willing to accommodate, you know, whether it be working from home or working or, you know, kind of carpooling in, as some companies are doing, you know, if they're not making any effort to try to alleviate that pain, then, yeah, with the unemployment rate we're at today, it's very easy for that employee to find another job. The interesting piece, too, is that from a millennial standpoint, those surveyed felt like their employers of that, you know, kind of 18 or 22 to 34 age range, I guess, are finding that their employers are much more accommodating, which, you know, really probably leads down the path of, you know, those employees are most keenly aware of the unemployment market, you know, kind of experiencing the benefits of that employment market, and therefore, you know, employers are recognizing that and doing more to try to retain them through that accommodation.
Well, Chicago has the largest number of workers who said they'd left a job, more than Miami, New York, and San Francisco. Thanks for joining us today, Tom. Tom Young is managing a vice president of the staffing firm Robert Half here in Chicago. And you'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of Wall Street. Sponsored by Baird, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we've got a rally on Wall Street with the Dow up 373 points, NASDAQ advancing more than 2% or 141 points, and the S&P higher by 39. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg up almost 2%. The president told Reuters he'd consider intervening in the case of a Chinese executive's arrest if it would help secure a trade agreement. The Wall Street Journal also reported separately that China plans to give foreign companies greater access So investors are cheering those developments. If you bought something from Under Armour recently, there's a good chance you got it on sale. After a tough 2017, the brand spent this year clearing out inventory, cutting unpopular products, and speeding up the time it takes to make new ones. Today, the company's been outlining its plans for 2019 to investors, but they aren't so sure it can make good on its slogan for the year, execute. And the stock is dropping. With Business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.